Nigga Baka.
Yes, sir.
What's going on? I had to kill the intro. This is the new show.
You are now tuned in to the Bleed Blue Show. Here are your hosts, Steve Blair and Chris Miles.
Intro, blah blah blah, but you already know this is Bleed Blue Show, Knickerbocker Avenue. Let's do this again, Knickerbocker Avenue. What's going on? How you doing?
it'll only happen to us, won't it? we're trying to kill intro and it just comes out of nowhere.
Man, yeah, I'm doing all right, man. I'm about to take it off, and it was just to kill that, because we're here doing the mentality of a Knicks fan. This is the fan friendly podcast. There's really no. This is pretty much impromptu how we really feel. Knickerbocker, let's just get right into the heart of this thing. You're a Knicks fan. I'm a Knicks fan. We've been Knicks fans for a long time. This is the platform to just express your thoughts. We're not talking no games or anything like that, unless you want to talk game. This is just something for the fans to listen to. And this is real fans. This is real talk. And we're just going to have fun. That's pretty much what it comes down
to. Yeah, that's what we do here. We have fun. We'll talk about the fans, to the fans, more the fans, by the fans. And you and me, perfect example. I mean, we've both been Knicks fans for plus, 20 plus years, since back in the Ewing days. And, we've seen the highs and we've seen a lot of the lows. And, man, it's just like these lows, is like you can't shake them off no matter what you do. I mean, yeah, the season's over and, now the team is brand new, and Phil did what he supposedly wanted to do, and it's just, for me as a fan, I still don't feel like I shook that 17-win season off. Despite what everybody's been thinking, what everyone, is saying, how people are feeling about the draft picks and the acquisitions, I still don't feel like I shake this last season off. Like, I can't get it off me. Like, I have, like, this bad smell on me. You know what I'm saying?
Explain that a little bit. Like, why do you feel that way? I mean, it's not really nothing to rave about 17 years. I get you on that. But what – tell the fans that's listening, when they listen to this, why do you feel the way you do? I mean, besides the 17 years. Like, spill it out.
Well, if you look at it on paper, everybody – it's trying to give Phil Jackson the benefit of the doubt of the acquisitions he's made, the deals that he's made, things that he's done. But really, if you look at what he's done over this offseason, I mean, really, did he really make that much of a vast improvement? I don't think he did. I feel like he's kind of like just trading parts. Like, he's taking this rusty wheel and putting another one in its place. And it's I'm not saying we're going to have a repeat performance of last season, but I'm feeling like we're going to have a little bit more of the same, where we're going to have so many frustrating moments, and it's going to be you, me, and Chris, and other fans every other night, wondering what is Derek Fisher doing? Why is this guy not performing? What is this guy not doing? We're still like a piece or two away, and it's like this offseason for me needed to be looking towards winning NBA championship, or at least competing for one. Now, anybody who's looking at this team is going to be honest with themselves. This team is not competing for an NBA championship. This team is barely competing for the division, let alone an NBA championship. So, and I'm thinking to myself, why in the blue hell are we gearing up for this, and we're also kind of, and there's so many fans on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Google Plus, where you can find the Bleed Blue Show on, and you see it, I hear it, we all see it, like, a lot of them are excited to death about it,
finish your thoughts, man, you're doing good.
It's a weird circumstance because I get it. Everybody booed Porzingis when he got drafted. Now everyone's starting to, you know, like it up to the kid. And I'm no different. I'm looking at him and I'm starting to, you know, have a soft spot for him. He's kind of a dork and kind of funny. And, you know, he has some personality and everything. And he's saying all the right things. But personally, do I think that he still, you know, does that change my reflection about him? Do I still think that he was the right choice? I'm going to say it flat out and honestly, hell no. He's still the wrong decision. I like the kid. I like what he brings to the table, and I think he has a little bit of potential still, but I still think he's the wrong decision. And I think a lot of these other decisions that Phil Jackson's made, along with his, you know, opening his mouth and talking about ex-players, it's a bad look for this team right now.
You're hearing the words from the infamous Knickerbocker Ave, the source for the streets for your New York Knicks. You can find Knickerbocker Ave on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Knickerbocker Ave. That's Knickerbocker Ave. Give out the correct spelling of your Twitter, your Instagram handles, and your Facebook. We're going to let everybody know how they can find you.
On Facebook, at Knickerbocker Ave, as it's spelled. On Twitter, at Knickerbocker Ave, without the O. And on Instagram, at Knickerbocker Ave, without the O or the E.
Right.
That makes sense.
All right. Yeah. I like what you're saying. I mean, this is, we create these fan series, these podcasts, usually is me and Chris 95% of the time, but we do these things in between the round tables and your fan forums and your dugouts and the rinks and all that other stuff, because we want to create a platform for the fans to really express themselves the way they do. And you have a lot on your mind. I know you can't get them all out on the fan forums, and this is the time to do it. But hold on, Knickerbocker. We've got one of our stakeholders. I guess he wants to talk in and talk Knicks with us, too. The infamous, the great Sim is on the line. Sim, Knickerbocker has a lot on his mind, and I'm pretty sure you may do too. What's up, Sim?
Sim. This connection's got to be bad.
Maybe not. I thought he was on the line, but let's do it like this. But here, Knickerbocker, we were in communication the night of the draft.
Yep.
I was actually a half hour late to the draft. Let me say my little story, because I thought the draft was on at 8 o'clock for some reason. I didn't even look at the time. For some reason, it was on earlier than I thought. So by the time I turned on the television, I saw that we were picking. And as soon as that pick came across the board, I think I got the message from you saying who we picked. And I think I was just in disbelief, because that's not who I wanted, blah, blah, blah. So I was just kind of like shocked. I was just kind of like, what in the hell? What did we do? I, too, was disappointed, as pretty much most of Knicks fans were. I fell asleep during the draft. I think it was after the Kaminsky pick with Charlotte. I woke up in the middle of the night to a gang of messages. I think one may have been yours too, of who we got with Jerry and Grant, with the what happened with the rights with the Hawks and Tim Hardaway Jr. So that kind of made my draft. Now, I'm a delusional Knicks fan. I'm a loyal fan, Knickerbocker, but I'm also a little bit delusional, because I'm not really looking at this thing as I look at this very optimistic. I'm not saying we're competing for a championship. However, I do think we could be somewhat competitive with the pieces we got to a degree. We are going to be fighting for an ace. That's how I feel about this. But go ahead and continue, because I think we have smarter basketball players. Some of these guys are better pieces and fits. I'm not saying with the triangle, but maybe more as far as a two-way lineup, with at least a nine, a good nine going with this.
I agree with you. I mean, this team could possibly fight for an eighth or a seventh seed in the Eastern Conference, because considering the Eastern Conference is still going to be weaker. It has gotten better, but it's still going to be relatively weak in comparison to the West. But in my opinion, this team is so, to me, it looked like Phil Jackson did he just switched around some pieces and just polished it up and made it. And it's kind of like you're getting a used car, and all you did was, you know, you changed the engine, not for a brand new one, but for like a rebuilt one. And the transmission is rebuilt, and, you know, the like the interior's got some, you know, cigarette burns and some discolorations, and you know the AC may not work or something like that, because we're looking at this team. No one can tell me who's the definitive number two scorer on this team behind Carmelo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
no one can tell me who's the definitive power forward. No one can definitively tell me who's going to start at point guard. I mean, we all have our opinions, and I'm with you. I believe Jerian Grant should be the starting point guard, because to me, he's probably the pure point guard out of them all, because Jose Calderon, he can't defend. He can shoot, but he can't defend, and he's just consistent, and he's also very frail in terms of injury prone. Langston Galloway is more of a shooting guard, if anything, but he can't handle the rock. So, you know, having them two in the backcourt will make it interesting. But that's where the big logjam is you start Aflalo at the two. Then what do you do with Galloway? Does he come off the bench? I mean, no one can tell me someone definitively who's going to be the number two guy, who's going to be that leader in that locker room and on the floor when Carmelo Anthony is out. You know, because he can't play all 42 minutes as much as he does play already. He plays 37, which is too many for me. But who's going to be that number two guy? And no one can give me a definitive answer. I mean, I put that out there almost weekly, and I'll get 300 different answers. So that's a big problem for me.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I understand where you're coming from. I'm not even disagreeing with you. You have a great point, Knickerbocker, and I don't even have the answer to that. I think it's going to be number two by committee, and I think number two by committee is not good enough for you. And I don't even know if that's good enough for me, but I think that that's going to be the way this team is going to be built. See, if I was coaching this team, Knickerbocker, I'm getting this team to the playoffs. I could get 45 wins out of this team. I know if I was a coach, I could get 45 wins, because I would start Grant, Follow. I would even roll the dice and put Melo and Derrick Williams in the same starting lineup, because I don't think you could cover both. I don't think you could cover 2 6-8 guys as versatile as both of those guys, and they could be both scoring machines at the same time. By starting those two guys, I could have the flexibility of having a true power forward coming off the bench like O'Quinn. That's how I would run the lineup, and I would start Robin Lopez at center. Then I have Kristaps Porzingis coming off the bench. I would even throw him into the fire. So I would start with those five. And then, of course, I would have Galloway coming off the bench. And I would have Calderon and Early and who else am I missing? I think that's pretty much – oh, yeah, Edmondson and Thomas, the rotational guys. I thought, you know, those are the three Knicks from last season in the 17-win season in Knickerbocker that they – we didn't have a lot to cheer for, but when they did come in, they gave us effort. They gave us some sort of will and hard work. And I'm actually glad those three are back. Well, how are your thoughts as far as those three guys?
Galloway, Amundsen, and Thomas. I'm happy that they're back. They deserve to be on this team. They earned their spot. They earned their money. If anything, we're still getting them at a bargain. But because of salary restrictions and so on and so forth, that's the way they are. But those three guys, you're absolutely right. They showed us that they have heart, that they have determination, that they have the maturity and the sense of mind to adjust their game and tailor their game, and then just give themselves up completely to the will of what the team needed to do in any game situation. They weren't all the – I mean, they're not superstars by any – or stars or even all-stars. They're not the guys that are going to light up the freaking the stats, you know, with 27 points and, you know, and 15 rebounds. But they're the kind of guys that show you effort, that, you know, that make you get invigorated, that whenever they, you know, they do something crazy, whether it was going for a loose ball or a crazy dunk, that even in a 30-point blowout loss, we're like, okay, we're going to go back to this one little moment and this little highlight and just keep on playing it over and over again and hope that we forget about the rest of the game. But, no, Phil did them right by bringing them all back. It was the wise decision.
I think if those three come off the bench, that gives me somewhat hope of what we can expect in a regular season. At least they went through the growing pains of last season, get an opportunity to display their skills off the bench, because I felt if any of those guys started, we're in trouble. But not that because they're like terrible players, but I think they're more useful coming off the bench based off the makeup of what I want our team to be. I think they're excellent role players. to fill in the second half, or not even the second half, but the last 5 minutes of the first quarter going into the second quarter, and then maybe mid third into the fourth. I thought there were nice pieces, nice plugs. Those parts of the games when you get them minutes, they 15 to 25 minutes for each of those guys, 15 to 20 minutes perhaps for those three in particular. And we know Amundsen, he's going to be real as far as hustle. He's a hustle guy. He's going to be he's perfect for coming off the bench. I like that. I find Lance Thomas to be a very smart basketball player. Usually a lot of those players that go to Duke are good, smart, IQ basketball players. They may not be the most talented in the world. And I think that's kind of where Phil is kind of leaning towards. I mean, there wasn't really a lot of guys Knickerbocker have in free agency that I did want anyway. I didn't want to overpay for like Aldridge or some of those guys, Gasol. I think they're nice players, but some of these guys are really not max players. I'm cool and not overpaying for these guys because that's the trap we've been in for like the last 15 years anyway. Overpaying for guys that were really, truly max players. There's really, to me, there's really only three in the league, maybe four.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right because look, like I said in the previous show, I mean, these guys are not top-tier, marquee, max players, all-stars, superstars that will transcend an organization. These are guys that are like usually a number two or a number three piece on any championship-winning team. And under no stretch of the imagination do they deserve to be a maxed-out player making between $18 and $22 million a year. But that's pretty much the freaking the landscape of the NBA now. I mean, when you're looking at some of these guys who got these big money contracts, I mean, for crying out loud, Damari Carroll, Iman Shumpert, Tyson Chandler, DeAndre Jordan. That's another freaking story, but we can talk about them later. LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, if you just see the contracts that some of these guys ended up getting, it's ridiculous, and it's almost starting to wonder if you can give Damari Carroll, you know, between 48 and $56 million, you know, for 4 years. Then you're looking at LeBron, and you're like, dude, you're still underpaid, like ridiculously underpaid. And you're looking at Kobe Bryant, and you're looking at Kevin Durant, and even Carmelo Anthony. He's in that conversation, or even Anthony Davis. Those guys are getting ridiculously underpaid. Because if those guys are worth 13 to 15, these guys are worth between 25 and 30. That's just my opinion, but I'm not the commissioner of NBA basketball, unfortunately, so I can't really adjust that. But it's just a crazy situation. And, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they didn't overpay for an Aldridge or a DeAndre Jordan or a Marc Gasol or guys like that. But at the same time, they could have been a very complimentary number two piece behind Carmelo Anthony, and you could have been all right. Now we can compete for, you know, at least respectability in the Eastern Conference. Right now we're looking at just trying to survive to make the playoffs, so we can be a one and out team. I don't know, man. I'm still not like very optimistic about how this team is going to look come opening night.
It's not too often where Bleed Blue Show Steve, that's me, is more optimistic than Knickerbocker Ave. It's usually the other way around. I'm actually all right with this squad. I'm not saying this team is going to win 60 games and number one, number two seed in the East or whatever. I think this team, if they could stay away from the injury bug, I think they could pee. I think they could get into that 40-game range. And that could get you the playoff spot. That's all I care for right now, just getting into the playoffs. I know a lot of Knicks fans who are older than us, generational-wise, they haven't seen the championship since 72, 73. Of course, me and you, we never seen the championship with our squad, and that's one day it will come. But if I have waited this long as a Knicks fan, I am more than okay to rebuild this thing because you gotta get a clean slate. You can't inherit crap and salary cap purgatory and players that probably didn't fit the system the way you wanted to fit the system. If I could wait this long for the team to develop the way a championship team could, why not the next fan? But hey, a lot of fans feel the way that they do. Let's try it one more time. Sim, are you out there? You want to come on?
Yeah, my bad, fellas.
There he is.
I was zoned out for a second. I forgot I had the phone on mute because I had a lot of noise in my background. And I forgot for a second, but yeah, man, listen, y'all both making valid points, man. And, you know, I know Phil got killed, you know, like you said, Ab, he got killed for a lot of the moves early, but I mean, in retrospect, man, when you look at a lot of moves that he made, yeah, they may not have panned out to be the best, but they didn't turn out to be the worst, especially when you consider the way that JR and Shump put themselves flat on their face in the finals. And I know a lot of people killed them over the Calderon trade and all that, but I mean, at the end of the day, the same Dellinger that they cut, the Mavericks just re-signed to a deal. So, I mean, I really, how bad, you know, are the moves? Now, granted, maybe he could have gotten, you know, a little bit more for them. And, you know, it's reason to be optimistic, man. Don't be a Debbie Downer over there. You know what I mean? I'm not saying, you know, Canyon Heroes or nothing. But it's just little things that, you know, I'm encouraged by. Just the fact that a lot of guys that did sign, they wanted to come here and they wanted to play. And that's, you know, that says something about wanting to take on the challenge, you know what I'm saying, of the big city and the bright lights, man. And, you know, I do believe that we got a couple more two-way players than we did have last year. But if anything, the biggest reason for optimism that I have is, although it was summer league, I like the fact that I saw Fisher letting the young guys run more pick and roll. And all I can say to myself is, if he brings that into the regular season and allows a kid like Grant to run pick and rolls with Lopez or with Melo or even with Porzingis, the way that that guy can get into the lane and his ability to distribute or get to the rim or get to the foul line, I mean, we, like I said, man, me and Ab was talking about this weeks ago. Marbury was probably the last person to be able to do that. And before that, you got to go all the way back to young Rod Strickland, you know, when the Knicks had a point guard that could get into the lane, dish it off, score, get to the line. And that's saying something. And we're in a perimeter-based league. And, you know, when they made the trade for Hardaway for Grant, I said to myself, damn, we may have just got the steal of the draft and nobody freaking knows it because they don't really follow college basketball. And if they do, they usually follow the Kentuckys and Dukes and Arizonas and North Carolina. So a lot of people didn't really know about him, you know, in North James. But I feel positive just from that because I think Fisher has learned something his first year, and that's that as good as the triangle might be as an offense and gets everybody involved, you can't be so predictable with what you're doing. So you got to mix it up. You got to run pick and roll, set pick and pop. And I like the way that we did that in summer league. So if we can take that same type of offensive action into the regular season and have that same type of defensive effort, you know, that those guys had, then I think we'd be fine. I agree with Steve. I can see this team winning between 42 and maybe 45 a game, you know, if everything broke the way that it should. But it's a little bit of reason to be optimistic. I call it being cautiously optimistic. You know, I'm not going to be out here tooting the horn too much because they got to get on the court and they got to show me the product. But I'm cautiously optimistic. And, you know, like Steve said, man, I went through the Scott Layden era. I went through the Isaiah Thomas era. If I can make it through that, man, I can weather this shit out a little bit longer, yo.
Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing. I want the audience to get to know you two guys and myself a little bit more as Knicks fans. So isn't this fan-friendly podcast, thank you guys for joining the platform as you, the loyal fans that you are and the stakeholders to this platform, because we're all equal. We're all stakeholders. We all have equal say. But we want to know who you are as fans. Knickerbocker app, just tell us about your fanship with the New York Knicks, when you became a fan, who was your favorite Knick, which era you're close to, how do you, as a kid growing up as a Knicks fan, just tell us like your fanship with the New York Knicks. This is the mentality of a Knicks fan.
Well, I've been, like I said before, I've been a Knicks fan for almost 25 years. It's really around 1989, 1990, around that time frame is when I got introduced to the game of basketball. And, of course, my first game was Michael Jordan. And, you know, everybody has to respect the game of MJ to begin with. But because I was watching MJ, my dad was watching MJ, and he was playing the Knicks. And it was a game where I think I saw Patrick Ewing was really, you know, was putting a hurt lock on him. It was also a game that Jordan dunked on him, but it was a game where two superstars really showed out why they are superstars in this league. And I fell in love with the game of Patrick Ewing, and I've always been a Patrick Ewing fan, even to the point where, you know, when he missed that layup in 95, when he, you know, when he refuses to shake the hands of the Miami Heat players in 97, you know, so on and so forth. I've witnessed all that, and I've always stood by Patrick Ewing. But then they freaking traded him to Seattle, and I would have to say a lot of my love for the Knicks died a little bit that day. And I still watch the Knicks, but I wasn't watching as religiously as I wanted to, because I didn't have a player I can relate to. And then I just said, you know what, screw it. I'm from New York. I got to rep New York. I got to be New York. And, you know, before people started calling me Knickerbocker Ab, you know, me being in the military and living in California for a while, they just called me New York. So I had to rep New York to the fullest. So I was wearing an Antonio McDyess shirt at the NBA All-Star game. It didn't matter. I would wear the Stephon Marbury jersey. It didn't matter. Or Steve Francis or a Tracy McGrady jersey. It didn't matter. Because it wasn't about the name on the back. It became more and more about the name on the front. And that's how I've taken it from that point on. You know, when I first opened Knickerbocker Ave, and I got and me and the Sim, you know, when we were talking about it, we have to talk about the team and not worry so much about the players, because players come and go, but we will always have the New York Knicks. We will always have Madison Square Garden. We will always have our love for the New York Knickerbockers, no matter what. Mm. Carmelo Anthony may be here, may not be here. It matters not. It's about the New York in front. It doesn't say Knicks. It doesn't say Yankees, Nets, or any of that nonsense. It says New York. And that's what I've been. That's where I'm from. And that's where I plan on dying whenever that day happens. So I pretty much have a cemetery plot in Cypress Avenue right around now. I'm gonna bury myself in New York. And that's how I've always been. Am I a fan of other players? Sure. I mean, yeah, I'll cop a game of Steph Curry every now and then, or a LeBron game. But when it comes right down to it, it has, and forever will be New York Knicks. And it goes across the board for KGYR, for the New York Knicks, the New York Giants, the New York Yankees, and now the New York Rangers. Straight up and down.
Man, Knickerbocker Ave is hype. I love it. And Sim, the same question for you. Tell everybody that's going to listen to this podcast, when you became a fan, the year, the whole shebang, pretty much what similar to answering the question for Knickerbocker Ave. I mean, I'm going to say the same
thing. Hey, man, like my brother Ave, I've been a Knicks fan for over 20 years. My fandom started, I want to say, 89, 90. It was that first round series when the Knicks came back from 0-2 down to beat Boston 3-2 in the first round.
When is that the one when Ewing hit the three in the corner?
When he hit the three in the corner. The turnaround three in the corner.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I was hooked, because it's like, yo, it was just like, man, I like these dudes. They're going hard. You know what I mean? This is just something about it, man. They just had like a grittiness to them, man. And, you know, as the years went on and we got to the 90s teams with, you know, Mason, Barkley, Oakley, X-Men, it was just like they epitomized what New York was. Dirty, grindy, grungy, just do whatever it takes to make it happen. And I was just like, yo, that's me, man. That's where I'm from. That is all the same qualities that a cat from Brooklyn has, you know what I mean? And like Ab, man, I always up with the name on the front.
Is he there? Okay, I think he dropped. When he gets back on, I'll bring him back on. But Knickerbocker Ab, that was pretty much what you said as far as a Knicks fan. that is the equivalent of like a 30 for 30. that was drawn. I could so relate to that, because I too have been a fan as almost as just as long as you have, maybe about a year or two longer. Oh, he's back. And Sim, I hope everything's all right. I'll bring you back on. Go ahead and finish your thoughts, Sim, and I'll sit and I'll go ahead.
Yeah, my bad. Call the best service, Brian. Not to catch you. But I mean, I kind of like have, man, at certain parts of my six fandom, you know, part of me died. I'm not going to lie. When they traded Stark to Golden State, that was like a punch to the gut for me. But, you know, Sprewell came in and he did his thing, so it kind of it didn't hit me as hard. But like I said, man, they traded Big Pat. That for me kicked the gut. I don't know how. Like, yo, I'm a grown-ass man. I'm not even ashamed to say it, bro. When they traded Pat, man, I cried, bro. So I felt like, yo, they just took a piece of my fandom. You know what I'm saying? My teenage years just threw it away, man. And that hurt me before, yo. I said, when that happened, man, I didn't watch the Knicks for maybe like the first half of the next few. I refused to watch the film. And then just threw my dad coaching me into watching it again. I came back and, you know, started supporting again. At the end of the day, I was like, well, you know, it's the name on the front, not the name on the back. And that's the mantra, and I'll always live that. Been a Carmelo fan ever since, you know, was a fan of him at Denver from the outside looking in. You know, was ecstatic when we got him as a Knicks. But, you know, if this shit's out of his heart, I still love him as an individual player, but trust him to play the Knicks. I'm gonna want somebody digging that ass. Name on the front, not the name on the back. And you know, that's never changed, man. I believe orange and blue. If it's New York, you know what I'm saying, I represent it. You know, that goes for the, you know, the Rangers. That goes for you know, I'm a bit of an odd boy. I actually like the Mets, but I do, you know what I'm saying, follow the Yankees very closely, and I'm more success guy, you know what I'm saying? Like, if my team is out of it, they pretty much are every year. I'm like, all right, I'm going to see what the Yankees going to do, because at the end of the day, I'm in New York first. So I'll see what they got going on. It's just the one thing I could say that all of us could agree with, man, no matter where you go in this country or in this world, everybody almost knows somebody from New York. So New York has that universal respect, especially from Brooklyn. The first thing that Joe Fat asked me was, what borough are you from? And the number one borough to get respect is Brooklyn, New York, offensive respect. So it's only a matter of time before the team get back right and they get that respect that 90s team built back up and get right again.
Yeah. Let me get a little sports bio on myself. We're going to put that on thebleedblueshow.com for Steve and Chris. I've been a Knicks fan pretty much around the same time you guys. I'll say about 88, 89. To be honest with you guys, basketball wasn't really my favorite sport. It actually took a couple of years. I was actually a Yankees fan first before any team. And this was the Yankees in the mid-80s, so this wasn't the dominant team at that time. They were in between eras between the late 70s and, of course, the mid-90s team and the rest is history. I was a Yankee fan first. I never really was into basketball until actually I started playing basketball around 6-7 years old. I was always good with the jump shot, and I used to go to a neighbor's house to shoot hoops. And my father was a huge basketball fan. My father's a Knicks fan too, but he was also like more of like a Dr. J fan. He respected him when he was on the ABA Nets. The Knicks fans throughout those years in the 70s and the 80s. But I started watching the Knicks because the Knicks used to be on Cablevision. I don't know. That's pretty much how you guys used to watch the games too, right?
1-800-OK-Cable.
Yes. So I used to watch Knicks and Rangers. That's how I became a Rangers fan too. A few years later after that, I used to be a stat junkie. I mean, I am still to a degree, but I was real witty with the stats as a kid. I used to know every stat. Used to know their averages to the decimal point. I used to not miss a game at all. I used to see every minute. But when you become an adult, as you guys know, you got to really find time management as an adult. You got family. You got your the responsibilities and all that. But when I was a kid, I couldn't miss a Knick game. When I was old enough, I used to ditch basketball practice to catch the train to go watch the Knicks. I used to get in trouble with that too, man. Sometimes I did get caught, sometimes I didn't. I used to sneak out to the garden. Me and my old man, we used to go to the Knicks games all the time, especially in the 90s. One of my first games I can remember was when we played the old Seattle Supersonics. That's when they had Peyton Kemp. Who's the lefty? That guy, Michael Cage, was on that team. Percy Hawkins. Hold on, mute your phone. I think that's you, Senator. Mute your phone. But I used to be heavy into those Knicks teams, man, like you guys. They were tough, they were rugged. Mason, Xavier McDaniel for like a year or two. Anthony Mason came along. Of course, when Starks came along to the team, that was my favorite Knick of all time. Pretty sure a lot of you guys were Starks guys. We had the point guard situation. Even before that little era before that, we had Gerald Wilkins, Johnny Newman, Mark Jackson. They were okay Knicks teams. They were exciting teams. They weren't dominant teams because at that time, Boston was running things. Detroit was running things. Chicago was not right. It wasn't Chicago yet. They started to come along once Collins left and Jackson got onto the team. But as a Knicks fan, I vividly remember the turnaround three in the corner at the old Boston Garden. That was a moment, man. That was one of my favorite Knick moments as a kid. Every season, especially in the 90s, I used to be one of those kids where, as a Knicks fan, I'm like, man, Chicago's in the way. I used to get – it's like if when you grew up in the tri-state area and you wasn't a Knicks fan, I didn't like you. I was one of those type of fans. I couldn't stand you. Like, why would you root for the Bulls? Why would you root for the Lakers? Why would you root for a team not the Knicks? I never understood that. I've been a loyal Knicks fan forever, man. There's three teams I still can't stand to this day. I still can't stand Miami. That's probably number one. Chicago and Indiana. And then you already know those three reasons why. But here's the catch, though. I was, like you, Nick, about that. I was a huge Patrick Ewing fan. I love Patrick Ewing. That was our leader. That was my guy. I couldn't stand, Nick, about that. I couldn't stand when they played Orlando. When Shaq got onto the team. When they drafted him in 92, I think. Was it 91 or 92? One of those years.
92.
I couldn't stand Shaquille O'Neal because he used to always dunk on Pat. I couldn't stand it. But who was your adversaries, Knickerbocker? Who could you not stand as a Knick fan, even if it's today, 20 years ago? But which team, which players could you not stomach?
Well, I think for anybody from my era, I think Resident Evil number one would have to be the notorious Reggie Miller.
Oh, God. How could I forget?
He's probably number one. As much as we all loved and respected MJ, I couldn't stand his ass either. And forget Pippen. I couldn't stand his ass I couldn't stand the sight of him for like more than 5 minutes. But it was mostly like Reggie Miller, MJ, Scotty, and then, of course, Alonzo Mourning. I couldn't and anybody that Pat Riley liked at that point. So if you were associated with Pat Riley at that point, you were basically Osama bin Laden to me. That's kind of how I look at it because I just couldn't stand y'all. But, nowadays, I don't think I can say I have somebody who pisses me off more because as much as people can say, easily pick LeBron James, let's be realistic. Most people, even though nobody would like to admit it, would love to have LeBron James on the Knicks, but that's neither here nor there. But no, but back then it was definitely Reggie Miller. Bettler Shrimp, when he got into that fight with Patrick Ewing, 1991? He got on my nerves for a little while too, but. Aside from that, it was mostly Reggie Miller.
Yeah. I couldn't stand Reggie. I remember the Starks headbutt on Reggie at the old Market Square Arena. Oh, I couldn't stand Reggie. I could not stand Reggie.
That was the one time when Jackson became a Pacer, that's when I hated him with a passion. It's like I loved him when he was a Knick, but then once he went to Indiana and he was, you know, like leading Reggie and egging Reggie to fucking, you know, to do what he got to do to beat us. I'm like, Jackson, I can't look at you the same, dog. I'm sorry. I really can't.
Now you look at it retrospective, because it's business, but he's a guy from Brooklyn. St. John's is just, you hated to see that because he was once a Knick. I remember the draft night he got drafted by the Knicks. If you go back to that draft, I remember that. They cheered him on when he came, man. And that was an unexpected pick at the time. The same question for you. Who could you not stand it growing up as a Knick fan, team or player?
I got Av. I'm with Av, man. But Reggie Miller for me is number two. Nobody will ever take the place of Michael Jordan as my most hated person ever. That man single-handedly wrecked my fucking childhood in the early parts of my teenage years, yo. Single-fucking-handedly. Yo, you don't know how many times, man, I went to bed fucking wet spots on my pillow from crying, bro. Because I'm like, I just knew it was our year that year, man. And then with the stuff with Reggie Miller, that was it too. But the second time that I feel like the Knicks got robbed bad was when we played Miami, man, in that series. And everybody got suspended for leaving the fucking bench. I don't care what nobody tells me. That was the team that would have put Chicago out that year. Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was the year Chicago was 72-10, and the Knicks was the only team that beat them twice that year.
It was a year before that, but you're right. It's in that same period.
But I felt like, all right, man, the Knicks got a shot. It's only so many times they're going to be able to get, like, you got to get over the hump. And it's just the way that they played in the first round and the way that we took control of that Miami series and was up, you know, getting ready to finish the game and be up 3-1. And I'm like, all right, we got this shit in the bag and we're going to see them bitches from Chi-Town and we're going to bust their ass. And then it was just like someone just put money out in front of me and just snatched that shit back and laughed at me, man. And I was just like, wow. So for me, it will always be MJ, and Reggie was is the number two, man. That guy right there caused me a lot of heartache, man. That 8 points or 9 points in 8 seconds, whatever the hell it was, that killed me. The fucking 25-point fourth quarter and then flashing the choke sign, the spike. I was just like, bro.
I was so pissed.
And man, I was just like, bro. At one point in time, I was like, if I could have got a gun and shot Spike, I would have shot him like Spike. Shut the fuck up and sit down, man. You have this guy killing us. And it was like every shot, he would be looking at Spike and talking shit. And I'm like, God damn, they got to get security to get Spike out of here. He's killing us. But, it was just, it was, I look back on it now, man, and I can laugh. But back then, man, bro, you don't know, man, how many times my mom had to come get me from school because I got in a fight, bro. Fifth fight, because Joker told me, the Knicks is trash. They ain't shit. They ain't never going to win. I was like, what? And, man, at that time, I was a young little hothead. So you tell me some shit like that, I just flew off the handle, man. I had a lot of fist fights behind the Knicks, man. So, but I think that's where my love for them, because you only defend something or somebody that you love with all your heart like that. You know what I mean? If it really means something to you. And I was willing to, you know what I'm saying, to break balls and throw bowls if you talked about the Knicks. But those are the top two for me, man. But Miami is a close, like a 2A to Reggie. But like I said, MJ, man. That Joker killed so many of my dreams. I can't even bring myself to wear a pair of Jordans today, man. I refuse to.
Damn.
I at the time I couldn't stand Jordan. I've learned to respect him as I got older. But with Jordan, to me, the reason why I don't hate Jordan as much as I did Miller, because Jordan to me was more. He was doing that to everybody in the 90s. So it's not like he cut slack. It's not like, see, here's my issue with Reggie. If you're going to beat us, at least win the whole damn thing. But he didn't do that. So he would knock us out just for them to get knocked out. or we will beat them. They were just always in the way. They were always in the way. Same with Miami. They were just always in the way. I felt that Miami, that team, was trying too much to be supposed to be built like us, a rugged team, a copycat, a carbon copy. I couldn't stand them. They were just annoying. Like Tim Hardaway, Dan Marley, Lonzo Mourning, P.J. Brown, Bimbo Cole,
Jamal Mashburn. Clarence,
I couldn't stand that team. Reggie Miller, yeah. I mean, I don't I'll just be repeating what you guys have said. Now, what broke my heart was definitely before, because I thought that was a time that we should have won the NBA
championship.
Yeah, mute your phone.
I got you.
Yeah, there was a time, I thought the 94 team, because I remember coming home from baseball league. You know, that's when the Knicks and the Rockets were in the finals. I thought that was around the OJ chase, too. That was around that time, too. That kind of interfered, took the sting out of the finals because that became the national topic. But I swear to God, I thought Starks was going to hit that jumper in game six, man, if it wasn't for Olajuwon jumping out. Knickerbocker, I don't know if you remember that game, but.
Yeah, game six of the 1994 NBA Finals with 4 seconds left. Houston had a foul to give, and Starks got a screen from Ewing. He took he was wide open for like 2 seconds, hesitated for just a split second until Olajuwon got there, blocked the three, and then they ended up winning that game, forcing a game seven where they ended up beating us by, I think it was like 8 points. But yeah, that was probably one of the most hardest Knickerbocker losses that I've had to endure. I think the Reggie game where he scored with like 12 points in 7 seconds, that was a hard one to endure, along with the Ewing missing the finger roll in game seven in that series. The issue with Miami, and there've been a number of different losses where, you know, we had to sit there, we had to soak it up, and we had to fight ourselves from, you know, shedding that one tear. And you can't help it, it'll come out, and then here comes, you know, the waterworks, and you really just, you know, you'd be like how a Simmons is saying, you know, you want to hit something, because it's just like, we were so close, we were almost there, we were about to achieve something that we have yet to enjoy, and because we witnessed it with the Yankees, we witnessed it with the Giants, we got the 94 Stanley Cup, but we never got to enjoy the Larry O'Brien trophy being hoisted up in Madison Square Garden by the Knicks. And, man, yeah, but I do remember the Game 6, 94 finals. I remember the 99 finals when Sprewell was basically the one-man wrecking crew because, you know, LJ was hurt, Patrick was hurt. Camby had no game that night. He couldn't stop Duncan and Robinson. Thomas couldn't do anything. I mean, Houston was doing as much as he could, but he was having a really horrible series. Man, it's like Knicks history over here because after 99, it wasn't until like 2010 where you really had some really good Knick moments. I mean, there are a few of them. You know, Jamal Crawford hit a couple of threes here and there to win the game. That tip in by David Lee in one game he had. There's a couple of games where Stephon Marbury went to the floor to beat the buzzer. I mean,
what about Lynn Sanity?
Here and there.
Lynn Sanity
was it was a nice little 8-game winning streak. I think people and the media made it bigger than what it really was, and so to me, when he signed with Houston, the only reason I was mad is that somebody was actually stupid enough to give him $25 million, but that's just my freaking personal opinion. I don't think he was ever worth it.
And
for any Knick fan who still holds on to that or still holds on to the fact that Melo's the reason that he's not here, I'm going to tell you once and for all, be glad that he's not here now because he hasn't done smack since. Case in point.
Yeah, and Asuma, what about you as far as is there any particular players, squad, anything else you want to add as far as how you feel as the mentality, the approach to the Knicks as a fan that you are?
I mean, pretty much like Av, man. I've lived highs, lows with the teams. We talking Houston from the foul line, bounce around the rim, free well with his emphatic dunks, you know, all the way down to the low lights of losing game 7, losing game 6. Just watching the franchise, the proud franchise that we have, like, disintegrate before my very eyes. It's like there was so much going on, man, that I love. But just like New York City, man, you're going to have good times, you're going to have bad times. But you take the good with the bad and you roll with it. And I love it. I wouldn't change any of my experiences except for maybe 94 when I feel like we got a we had a legit chance to get there. And I know a lot of people give Starks a lot of grief for that, but a lot of people don't realize that the playoff run that we did have, if it wasn't for Starks, especially from like the second round through game 6 of the finals, we would have never got that far without his contributions to the pack. But everybody pretty much looked at that game 7 and what he didn't do. But I'm just a Knicks fan through and through, man. You gotta love it and take the good with the bad. And I'm like you guys, man. I didn't see the Rangers. You know, I remember being 5 and being at the, you know, at the game 7 for the Mets on my uncle's shoulder. You know, I've seen 2 Giants Super Bowl. Actually, I'm lying. I've seen 3. You know, the last 3 90s, 2007, 2011. But my wish in life is to see that Larry O'Brien trophy raised at center court at Madison Square Garden before the good Lord called me home, you know. And I'm hoping and praying that we get there somewhere in 15 years, man, because who knew that those 90s things that a lot of people complained about was pretty much going to be like the epicenter of what we wish we had right now.
Yeah, I took it for granted at that time, too, as a kid. I thought watching the Knicks at that time was, this is where we're going to be every year. We're going to be a 50-win team. We're going to be in the playoff hunt. And the struggle ever since that, starting at the turn of the century. And you got to take every moment. You got to take a moment and soak it in as many as we get, because you don't know when the next time you're going to be there, especially as Knicks fans. So watching these teams, like when we had the 54-win team a few seasons back, just a glimpse of hope. And I think that's the mentality of a Knicks fan, whether you grew up during the Frazier years and Reed, or even in the 80s with Richardson, Ray Richardson, or even Bernard King down onto Pat, and even the Marbury squads with Francis and Grady and Othella Harrington and all those guys who bombed out. And then now with Carmelo Anthony being the perceived leader for our squad, I would just hope to see one. Just get me one. Just start off with one. Get off with one. I want to see a championship, because basketball probably is my favorite sport of all the four. Yeah, I love all my teams equally, but as far as the sport itself, because I love basketball. Basketball, football. I love all sports, but basketball probably is the more dear, because I could watch 10th grade basketball and be engaged. I really can't really do that for all the other sports. Maybe football, boxing too, but it's something about basketball, and it's something about being a Knicks fan that I'm so passionate about. Because I you're talking about a Knicks fan even just this past season when Orlando we beat Orlando in a game back in January. I jumped up in the car and drove 4 hours just to go see the Knicks. Out of the fly without even having a ticket. I'm still passionate about this. And I have crazy stories, even about 10 years ago, flying all over the country to go see the Knicks, knowing that there weren't a good team. There's something about this team, I'm willing to go see them at any point in time and just rep them. And then you can see it in the crowd, whether Las Vegas, none but Knicks fans in the crowd. There's something about this squad that is just a loyal following. It's one of the best followings in sports. Knickerbocker Ave, what about you? What about your optimism in between seasons as a Knicks fan? Like, how do you look at it as far as mentality? I know you how you said it at the top of this podcast, as far as you're not as optimistic as I am, but how is it normally for like the last 25 years, your expectations? Do we go to the center or wrap it?
Well, during the 90s, I was always up. I was always hopeful because I'd always felt like the Knicks were, you know, in right on the cusp of contending for an NBA title. And then, of course, after 94, I felt like this is the year we're going to do it. And we're going to do it with Jordan back. And now there's no more excuses, and that didn't happen. And during the Scott Layden and Isaiah Thomas years, I wasn't too hopeful. I mean, my optimism was pretty much at a low. I think it was understandable for just about everybody. I mean, anybody who's watching the Knicks during that time will know that that was not the ideal time to be a Knicks fan. But if you became a Knicks fan during those years, God bless you. Because there wasn't a lot of that team to really enjoy and love and admire. But then once Amari Stoudemire made the move in 2010, and I started to really start to think, okay, we're starting to finally see some progress. And then we started to see the team start to fight hard and start, you know, fighting for respectability and contention. And then, of course, the big trade in the middle of that season. And then every year after that, I was a little bit more hopeful, especially after that 54-win season in 2013. I was thinking that this team would definitely be a Eastern Conference championship contender. Even last season, because I also fell into the hype. I felt that with Phil Jackson taking over as president of basketball operations and the move for Tyson Chandler, which I thought was a good idea at the time, but in retrospect, of course, we all know that wasn't the smartest move to make, but it is what it is. But even then, I still thought that this team was a playoff team. And then once we got to the playoffs, that things could happen. After this past season, though, and knowing the moves that we've made, the kind of draft that we ended up having, and you know the acquisitions that we made, my optimism is low, and maybe it's probably for my own safety, for my own mentality, because I'd rather be pleasantly surprised than be obviously disappointed. So, that's pretty much my going rate as year by year, you know, throughout the certain different eras. But I would like to be proven wrong and you'd be proven right, where this team is a 45-win team in the Eastern Conference playoffs contention and looks like a team that very easily can knock out the number one seed just because they're that dangerous.
Yeah, definitely. And we're going to have that discussion every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And Sim, can you give us a quick 20 seconds? We're running out of time. Your final thoughts as far as the mentality of a Knicks fan. Quick 20 seconds.
Mentality is the grind, baby. That's what we do. We get up, we do things, we get it how we get it, and we do it by any means necessary, pretty much. And you tell us that we can't do something or we're not supposed to do something, and we dead set on proving you wrong. And that's that pride of a New Yorker, and it's the pride of a New York fan to never back down and to always take on a challenge. Whether we win or lose, we're going to get our best effort, and that's pretty much what we do and how we live.
All right. This is the Mentality of a Knicks Fan podcast featuring Knickerbocker Ave, the infamous Knickerbocker Ave, source for the streets. You can find Knickerbocker Ave at the Facebook page, Knickerbocker Ave, Twitter, Instagram, Knickerbocker Ave. He's repping New York Knicks on the Knicks Fan Forum every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They're all the audio archives for Knickerbocker Ave and Knicks, the Fan Forum, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, iTunes. Tell your Knicks fans, tell your Knicks buddies, these are real Knicks fans. You got to hear from real fans. Don't hear from the media. Don't hear from the beat writers. Hear from soulful guys who got their emotions, that passes into the New York Knicks. This is what we do. We are Orange and Blue, Bleed Blue Show, of course. But share the audio with fellow Knicks fans. This is how we roll. As Knicks or die, pretty much, with this squad when it comes to the NBA team. But guys, we're all out of time. We will see each other. We got to do this again.
Absolutely. Can't get enough. But we're back tomorrow night.
And other than that, guys, bleed blue.
Sangre azul.
Yes, sir. Sangre azul.
Bleed blue, bleed blue, bleed blue, bleed blue, bleed blue, bleed blue, bleed blue.